Thank you, Bob. It's John Williams. How have you been, Mr. Kessler?
I've
pretty
been
good.
I hope. Yes. Yeah. Missed you last week.
Yeah. What was I doing last week?
Well, we had football here.
Yeah, that's right. I was just flat out preempted. In fact, if we knew how badly we were going to play, I think they would have just kept me on. But that's not how it works. Maybe we'll even our record.
Maybe they would have had you play.
Yeah, really. Really, I don't think so. I do have good football stories. I was a kicker in college for 1 year at Joliet Junior College, and I hated every minute of it. I'm not exactly sure why I went out for the team. I was a good kicker and punter, but I never enjoyed it. I at times wished I wasn't so good because I felt I should fulfill my destiny. If you can kick, you should kick. But what if you don't want to kick? I was a tortured soul. But enough about me. Okay, so in this hour, before we get to Northwestern football and guys that do want to play the game, we'll talk a little bit about the new I-7. We'll also play for you part of the Mincing Rascals podcast. And one other pat on the back to WGN listeners. We put tickets for our Thomas Jefferson show on sale, and that first show sold very quickly. Thomas Jefferson will be in town at the College of DuPage once again with me. This will be the Saturday before the election, the 5th. My goodness, will that be interesting and fun and funny and just awful, all of those things. So TJ and I are on stage. Well, the first show sold out very quickly. They put the second show up, and within a few days, a few hundred more seats had sold. They seat about 700 there, so you can get in, but I'd love for you to be part of it. And I also love the fact that we've sold over 1,000 tickets in a short period of time to people who are engaged, who care, who want some perspective from a founding father. And this is that. When this guy walks onto stage, you instantly forget that he's not Thomas Jefferson. You believe. And your questions are always so good. You can get tickets at WGNradio.com/events. The second show is a Saturday, 1 p.m. kickoff. Here is Suzanne Cantress. She is the founder and editor of Techlicious.com. Suzanne, it's John Williams. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Really good. I'm looking at my phone. I thought I would describe it to you.
Am I going to be appalled?
Oh, my God, John. How fascinating. It's an i5. So it's kind of old. I don't like the cases, so I don't put cases on it. I've dropped it a number of times, so I have that spider shatter on my face. And I've taped some of the glass together to hold it, but you can actually see some of the electronic guts on it. It's still completely functional, but people look at it and say, oh, my God, you've got to get a new phone. I'm a function over form guy. It's still a phone, Suzanne, so I don't know if I need the i7 or not.
Well, you need a new phone, that's for sure, because you can, if the tape comes off, you might actually get cuts on your fingers from the splintered glass on the front.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I mean, there's just so much more you can do with your phone these days. I mean, in terms of taking pictures and videos, being able to listen to better quality music.
Wait a minute, you can take pictures with these things?
Of course you can take pictures with these things. And, the cameras are getting so much better. We've seen as a trend people turning to their phones more and more and not taking their higher-end, either pocketable cameras or their DSLRs, because you're getting better quality photos. The lenses on the new i7, both the Plus and the regular model, have really fast lenses. So for the photo geeks out there, it's a f1.8 lens. But basically that just means that if you're in a very low light environment, the camera will take the picture really fast and will absorb a lot of light, so you don't have to use the flash.
It's also good for high speed things too. If you're watching somebody run or play football and you click, you've got a better shot at it too.
Exactly. It will it'll take that shot a lot faster, so you're not getting that motion blur or the camera shake from the low light situations.
Right.
The 7 Plus also has two lenses on the back, both a regular and a wide angle, and so it's now in effect going to be able to give you a 2x optical zoom lens. So you're going to be able to take wider vista shots. And then later on, they're going to be able to, in software update, you're going to be able to take better portraits. Now, have you ever seen those photographs where the person's face is in sharp detail and the back is out of focus?
Mm-hmm.
Your eye is really drawn to the features. They're going to have that that effect in a picture or a portrait mode. Just all these little features that add up to a much better experience is what we're seeing in smartphones today.
Will the face be bigger? Will I have a larger display?
Yes, you will definitely have a larger display. You're going to be moving up from a 4-inch to a 4.7-inch if you get the 7 or 5.5-inch, which will, to you, feel monstrously big.
Well, how is that in relation to the how does that relate to the 6, Suzanne?
So the same sizes as the 6 and the 6 Plus. So no increase there. You know, the differences are now it's water resistant. So if you drop it in the sink while you're doing dishes, or you know it gets in, it drops into the puddle on the street, you're not going to be in any danger of damaging it from water. You know, you can't take it scuba diving. You probably shouldn't take it snorkeling. You know, if you're standing in the pool taking pictures of your kids, you don't have to worry as much if it slips out of your hand and drops into the water.
But so the big talk. The big talk, though, is about the fact that it does not have a hole for your headphones, right?
Yes. And I will tell you, there are other phones in the market that do not have headphone jacks. And I had given one to my son on a trip recently, and I forgot about the fact that it didn't have a headphone jack. So what you need to do is either, for the iPhone, is either use the adapter that comes in the box, which, of course, you might forget, or you need to have a pair of wireless headphones. So there are tons of headphones in the market today. You can get Bluetooth wireless headphones for under $30 at this point. So it's not going to be much of an investment. And then Apple has their own proprietary headphones that they just announced as well that will pair more easily. But they're still based on a Bluetooth technology.
Still, it seems to me like we're always either forgetting or breaking or losing our headphones or some of our accessories. And so now if I have the 7 and you say, well, that's okay, you can use my headphone. Oh, no, wait, you can't use my headphones. You don't have a headphone jack. It has an external speaker, and I understand it's not a bad one, but I'm also just a little amazed that Apple is forever reintroducing technology to us that requires us to pony up again, and we all just go along saying, well, that's the way it is, new technology. And I mean, you even have to have a new case, right? Because
you do.
Because with the two lenses, you only got room for one lens in your current case, right?
Right. And the position of the camera is different on the back, even for the 7, which doesn't have the two lenses. So, yes,
well,
you're
going
to have to buy a new case.
What do you know? What do you know?
So they are going to say, well, but why would you have to buy a case? And now it's water resistant. But, of course, you know, none of these phones, if, you know, you're using them without a case, is shatter resistant. They're pretty tough these days. But if you let it drop face down, you're going to be in trouble.
$649, is that right?
Mm-hmm. That is correct. And it's just so you know, it's the same price as they had for last year's 6S. But they're giving you twice the storage for that entry-level model, which is definitely going to be appreciated, especially with so many more people taking photos and videos these days.
Mm-hmm. Apple fans are famously loyal. So is everybody loving this, or is there some pushback with maybe some of the new features which do require an adjustment?
Well, I think that we're not going to see as big an uptake on the 7 as we did on the 6. So usually every other year you get a big, big differences in the phone. So from the 5 to 6, there were differences, and people would assume that there would be a big difference in the 7. There really aren't. It's just minor upgrades, just as we saw from the 6 to the 6S. Now, what we're going to probably see, or what most people anticipate, is that next year, on the 10th anniversary of the iPhone, we're going to see major changes in the iPhone. So if you're happy with your phone as it is now, I don't know if you're seeing enough of a change, especially for those people who have a 6 or a 6S, to want to go out and buy a 7. Now, one thing that it might change some of this is that more and more people are on phone lease plans. So you know how with cars, you have your four-year lease. A lot of people go and they trade in and they get a new car. Well, the same thing is going to happen for people with phones. I have an iPhone 6S. I'm on a lease program. I can just walk into my wireless carrier and swap out and get the 7 now, and not have to wait and pay for a whole new phone. So that might impact a little bit in terms of whether people are going to want to move to that next device.
Suzanne Cantra is the editor and founder of a website called Techlicious. As you might imagine, it's all about technology, and she's just terrific. It's a really good website, techlicious.com. Suzanne, I'll call you again. It's always a pleasure to visit with you.
Thank you so much.
So let's pause, and then we'll start our Mincing Rascals podcast replay in part in just a minute. The part that we'll start with today isn't the meat of the conversation. We talked about crime in Chicago and the election, but rather the very end of the podcast where everybody had their recommendations. I don't normally play this, but at the end of each podcast, we say, okay, gang, tell me something you're reading, watching, listening to, or consuming that you want everybody to know about. And they were pretty good this week. You'll hear that coming up on WGN. Remember now, on Fridays, we drop the podcast called Mincing Rascals. Subscribe to it wherever you subscribe to finer podcasts. It features Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune, our own Steve Bertrand, and me. We recorded this podcast yesterday. At the end of each podcast, we do the recommendations. I'm going to play that part first. The first voice you'll hear will be mine just walking the gang into it. Producer Griffin does not believe that Eric Zorn's recommendation is authentic, but let's listen first here on WGN. Okay, let's do our recommendations for the week, kids. Something you're reading, consuming, watching, or
Steve
listening to.
Steve is raising his hand. He's raising his hand.
Bertrand, go first.
Just to follow on the presidential theme, since a lot of us will be moving to Canada one way or another after November, I'm reading a novel by a woman named Louise Penny, who I didn't know before, but she's got a recurring character. He's a detective or a police executive in Montreal, in Quebec. And this latest one is called A Great Reckoning. And it's just kind of a cool, it's an interesting novel. It's sort of almost, there's a northern exposure kind of town in it with these quirky characters, but it's sort of very serious too. And it's nice to read about Canada once in a while. A lot of French. And I was just on her website because, you know, you try to pronounce the names as you're reading them. On her website, she has a pronunciation guide for her characters.
Oh.
In audio.
Nice.
So you can listen to how
that.
She says them. So it's A Great Reckoning by Louise Penny.
I'll go next. If you need to, you know, ignore your family for about 36 hours, lose a bunch of sleep, and cry hysterically, I would recommend Me Before You, which I think was made into a film, but it's my book club book of the month, and it's just a really, really well-written and unpredictable. I was not predicting the way that it was going to end, and it's about a woman who takes care of a quadriplegic.
Jojo Moyes.
Thank you. I knew you would know the answer.
You should do. I interviewed her on that book. So.
You did?
Why don't you follow?
So
I follow
compelling.
Your podcast. You never follow mine.
Do you have a book podcast?
Kids, don't fight. Don't fight. Yeah, he does.
That's right. What he tried to tell the officer in Annapolis.
Your introduction is about the business lunch. You need to throw in your
officer,
podcast.
Officer, I have two
All right,
podcasts.
I'll go next.
You're
I'll
talking
go next
to a
and
man.
Then.
You pulled over a man who has two podcasts.
I'll give you one.
My recommendation is Hell or High Water. It is the Jeff Bridges, Chris Pine movie. And I thought it was really surprisingly good. There was a very interesting scene in it, too, by the way, where he's robbing a bank. They're robbing a bank. But it's in West Texas, and everybody in the bank has a gun. And so when they turn around and fire a shot, all of a sudden all hell breaks loose. You know, that argument about, well, if everybody had a gun, then we'd be able to put down the criminals. And the way that scene plays out, it's not that important to the movie, but it's a really interesting scene. Jeff Bridges is terrific, and my wife couldn't take her eyes off Chris Pine in this movie, so I'm recommending it, not for that reason, but because it's just a real good movie. Hell or High Water.
I'm recommending the reviews on Amazon of the 571B banana slicer. Have you guys seen this on Banana? Where people will... People will weigh in. They will have these really mundane products, and then the reviews will be hilarious. People will weigh in with these long, extended reviews of these extremely simple products. This is a little piece of plastic that has a bunch of little ridges in it. You push it down on a banana, and it slices is the banana. That's all it is. A little thing. And I just want to read one of the reviews here to give you a flavor of this. What can I say about the 571B banana slicer that hasn't already been said about the wheel, penicillin, or the iPhone? This is one of the greatest inventions of all time. My husband and I would argue constantly over who had to cut today's banana slices. It's one of those chores no one wants to do. You know, the old, I spent my entire day rearing our children. Maybe you can pitch in a little and cut these bananas. And, of course, you think I have the energy to slave over your damn bananas. I worked a 12-hour shift to come home to this. These are the things that can destroy an entire relationship. God to the point where our children could sense the tension the minute I heard our six-year-old girl in her bedroom reenacting our daily banana fight with her Barbie dolls.
Who are these
I knew we had to make a change. That's when I found the 571B banana slicer. Our marriage has never been healthier, and we've incorporated it into our lovemaking.
Oh, I hope we're not slicing anything off in the bathroom.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know how that
works.
There's
hundreds of them, and they're great.
My son likes to read. I guess on IMDb, they have, you know, lists are viewer reviews of movies. They have viewer previews, so the people are predicting how they're going to feel about the movies before they come out.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's really funny.
So thank you, gang. That's the 571B banana slicer review from Eric Zorn. Griffin doesn't think that's real. But I think that's real, Griff.
I believe that it's online, and someone wrote it and posted it in this space, but I think they were joking. I think it's very funny.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. I think we're on the same page. But you know what? Literally, I mean, do you think this is also true, though? Because when Eric was saying that to us, I was going along with somebody, had the banana slicer. They really loved it.
Yeah.
Maybe they were exaggerating, but they really do hate cutting bananas. Uh-huh. Are you still with me on this?
Yeah.
And then they just exaggerated their affection for it, but
I think that's also the joy that Eric takes in going into these comment sections are mostly sincere reviews that are just kind of funny to read. But that one
kind of jumped the shark there, didn't
it? No, I love it. I love it. But I couldn't tell if you guys thought it was real or not, and I had to bring it up and ruin it
you
for everybody.
You had to pop the bubble.
I'm sorry.
Why did you yuck my yum, as they say? I was enjoying that, Griff.
I did. You wanted me to come on.
All right, we'll pause here. But, you know, that's the icing on the cake. The meat of the Mincing Rascals was the gang waxing. And actually, I think they were really good this week about the crime in Chicago. I don't know if living in Chicago, you understand how much the rest of the world is looking at and talking about Chicago and the crime and the shootings and the numbers. And so the gang talked a little bit about that. They talked about Aleppo because that's what you do these days. And we'll get to all of that after the news. The news is next on WGN. Okay, Bob, we're going to jump right into the Mincing Rascals podcast. We always do it at this time, out of Bob's 1:30 news, a playback of part of the podcast that features columnist Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune, editorial writer Kristen McQuarrie, our own Steve Bertrand, and me. We record this and drop it on Fridays and then feature a little of it on the Saturday broadcast. I just couldn't resist the banana 571B slicer segment a moment ago. But here's the meat of it. And as you'll hear with my voice first, we talked about the problem of the shootings in Chicago. Chicago made news around the world this week, closing in on or passing the 3,000 shot, 500 kill mark. Your colleague there, guys, John Cass, noted in the Tribune that as much attention as the 500 gets, 3,000 is maybe the more terrifying number. But for bad aim, he said, the number killed would be higher. That's 3,000 shots that actually hit someone. It doesn't even include the missed shots, the bullets in car doors and buildings. 500 and 3,000 are more than Los Angeles and New York combined. At its core, to me, this isn't a crime problem. It's an economic one. The shootings are the symptoms. But for now, Band-Aid time. Still, nobody wants to roll out the National Guard. Anybody got any bright ideas this week on what to do or think about all of this?
No, but I do think the numbers is making this issue bubble up more and putting more pressure on public officials. The city council is now talking about, and the mayor talking about, hiring more police officers. The police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, has talked about the need to strengthen gun laws in this state and says, you know, if he had the laws that L.A. and New York City have, he would be able to cut the violence in half.
I was listening to an interview with Bill Bratton, the outgoing police chief of New York, who also served in L.A., and he was talking about New York, but then about Chicago as well. And he said, you know, right, Chicago cops have confiscated more guns than New York and L.A. combined so far this year. But he said that the Chicago police force per capita is actually bigger than most cities, which is not something that I realized. And he talked about the gun laws. So when we talk about gun laws, what they do in New York, right, and what was the push here earlier was for longer prison sentences and mandatory time for offenders using a gun, right? Is that basically what we're talking about?
You're caught illegally with a gun as a felon. You get 3 years mandatory in prison sentence in New York.
And that's why the superintendent says 70% of the shooters are known to them or gun offenders from before?
Right. We don't have a law that has a mandatory minimum, and generally I don't like mandatory minimums.
I don't either, but I think that...
But in this case?
Well, I think maybe you need to expand the sentencing guidelines for these judges to allow them to put some of these repeat offenders, these gun offenders, away for longer periods of time without necessarily ensnaring in that net people who are, you know, carrying a gun to protect themselves, and then they're, you know, they don't have the license or the serial number.
I mean, this is the conversation we were having in the 90s, right? The mandatory minimums led to all of these long sentences for relatively minor drug offenders, and that's what we're dealing with now. So,
yeah, but
that's sort of a warning about
mandatory.
Well, sure, there is. Well, hopefully there's a difference, but the mindset back then thought it was pretty clear that that was a good idea then.
Yeah, but
it's
I
just
mean,
a good,
if I go,
so, but what but Kristen though, says, it's a good warning against mandatory
yeah,
minimums.
These are not. This is not such a simple problem, because when all that locking up of people had its negative consequences for sure, but it also contributed to a drop in crime rate. I mean, there are paradoxes involved here, which is that yeah, when we locked up all these people, we hollowed out communities. And we, you know, there were a number of negative consequences, but there were also some positive consequences in that, you know, the crime rate went down. So that you can't just turn one knob, and that's one of the problems here. Obviously, you know, we always talk about these long-term solutions. We need jobs. We need better education. But what I don't know what the short-term answer is. Even some of these sentencing reforms, I don't know what the short-term answer is. How do we stop the number of murders and shootings in the next 4 months? How do we bring those down?
So, and just one thing I want to say to your point, right? The murder rate in Chicago is much higher than it's been in recent years, but nowhere near where it was in the 1990s.
Yeah, which is kind of terrifying, too. But don't the ends justify the means in this, Steve? Like, if you talk about minimum sentencing guidelines, and it maybe was inappropriately applied to, you know, marginal drug users, so if they get out, they might buy or sell some pot some more, but that's different than somebody, you know, using
yeah,
a gun.
No, I'm not arguing.
The consequences are graver.
I'm not arguing against it at all. I mean, I think it might be a good idea. I'm just saying this is where we were, and we're dealing with where we were in the 1990s right now.
This legislation, though, came up 2 years ago after Hadiya Pendleton was shot and killed, because, you know, she was this wonderful honor student who happened to get right under a shelter at a park during a rainstorm, and she was mistaken as part of a gang. And her shooter had a previous record for unlawful use of a weapons, and he was back out on the streets. And the bill in Illinois got watered down where it was just going to be 1 year mandatory minimum, and they couldn't even get that passed because the Black Caucus stood up and objected and said, this is going to target our communities, this is going to target our constituents. They wanted to see something in return. And really, it's their communities who are being terrorized. So.
Yeah.
Why aren't we at least trying it? I don't understand.
It would racially impact them more than, I don't know, white kids in the suburbs or families. Can you imagine,
the violence does. This is, I think, what Kristen's point is. I know she's here, so I can't channel her this week. Some of their constituents are going to get locked up with longer prison sentences, but many more of their constituents are going to be able to sleep better at night.
I'm not arguing with you, Eric.
I mean, it's like, and I don't, I really, you know, I have a strong aversion to this idea that, you know, anything that might, you know, temporarily put somebody in prison for a little bit longer, you know, I mean, like I say, that you can't just turn one knob here. And
I'm amazed, though. Think if 3,000 people had been shot in the collar counties. Think of this as a DuPage and Lake County problem, or you know, if it was someplace else, would, I don't know, the reaction be different? Would there be less tolerance of this?
You mean white people?
Yeah, I guess, sure, I do, Steve, but also financially better off people, too. I mean, I don't mind you saying that,
no,
but maybe
it's
a little more complicated than that, too.
Of course it would be different. We would have the National Guard brought in if communities like Winnetka were getting terrorized the way that some of these communities on the South and West sides were. Absolutely. We are so numb to this happening on the South and West sides with mostly black victims that we just keep talking about it. Oh, we should
right.
do this. We don't
right.
want to do anything so severe as to bring in the National Guard. Why the hell not?
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I if that was in my neighborhood, first, I'd have a gun on the corner, and I think I would want a police officer and a tank there, and I think that's the sort of justice we would all demand.
But you're right.
We treat it like taxes. Like, oh, well, everybody hates taxes, but they're there. 3,000 people shot. That's insane.
It is insane. The argument against National Guard troops is that they're not really trained for this at all. It would be a very strange position to put them in. And also the optics of it, that what it, you know, the armed camp of a city. I think that's why Governor Rauner was against it and why Mayor Emanuel's against it. I think that they do need to hire more police officers.
Try it for a month and just see what happened. Pick those two neighborhoods, wherever the worst of it is, and just see what would happen for a month. Optics be damned.
Wasn't there a program within, maybe still going on, where state police were going around with Chicago police? Was that under Blagojevich? Or?
No, it was under the police superintendent who left, whose name is escaping.
McCarthy.
He finally acquiesced at one point and called in help from state police, I think in 2014. But it just kind of fizzled out.
Right.
He was not a fan of bringing in other law enforcement. He felt that it just complicated matters, and you don't want to be seen as weak and inefficient, and so you have to call for help. But it is ridiculous. And I interviewed Adam Kinzinger, a member of Congress who's part of the National Guard, on this subject, and he said they could do the job. They could at least come in and do regular street patrols so that you could free up SWAT teams and, you know, rank and file Chicago police officers to be on every corner. They can do it. They just won't do it.
Do you also think this is a problem of the community itself? That is, it's not a problem for the mayor or the police chief to fix. It has to come from within. I don't know what they are supposed to do, but I think they have to own this and be part of the solution, too. It's not just the police to fix.
The police superintendent has said that. He can say this because he is the police superintendent and he is African-American, and he is calling on parents in these communities to parent their children. He's been saying that all week, that there has to be some role for the community to be watching over these kids and making sure that, you know, your kid doesn't have a 9mm under his bed.
Gary Johnson is the Libertarian candidate who will be the alternative vote for people that don't want to vote for Clinton or Trump. You can't do that, so you have Jill Stein and you have this guy, Gary Johnson, who in some states is polling double digits. He is a sort of legitimate place to park your protest vote, people think. So there he is on Morning Joe, and they ask him this question.
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About?
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria. It's the epicenter of the refugee crisis.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
with
regard to Syria.
You're getting it now.
And then he gave an answer, but it doesn't matter. Notice he didn't say, where is Aleppo? He said, what is Aleppo?
And he didn't give a good answer when he gave the answer.
Don't think so?
No. Jennings.
Ken
Jennings, the guy who was a Jeopardy champion, he's on Twitter a lot, he tweeted, he says, well, at least he answered in the form of a question.
He almost says it like he thought it was a. He's like, "What's
what
Aleppo?
Aleppo?
Like, are you?
Well,
are you? Is this Aleppo? A bedroom routine?
Yeah.
What is Aleppo?"
No, John. I mean, I was listening to it when it happened. I was actually at the gas station and I stopped, you know, jaw agape. I'm like, "Did I just hear what I heard?" And then his answer was, "Well, we need to hold hands and we need to join hands with Russia and we need to." I mean, it was clear he just didn't have. It's not why he's running. It's not his strong suit. And he didn't give a good answer once he realized what Aleppo was.
Well, I think
he
gave the Syria answer. Everybody has to have an answer to what do we do about Syria. I don't think he knew that Aleppo was a city in Syria, that is, in fact, the epicenter of this civil war over
there. I give him a little credit. I think that he just had one of those brain freeze moments that we've all had where somebody asks you something, asks you a name of something that you ought to know. I do give him a little. I cut him
some
slack.
That's the charitable view, but he later said he doesn't know every city in New Mexico either.
I didn't know where Aleppo was until last month. Really, when that little boy got thrown in the ambulance, that was in Aleppo.
That was in Aleppo, and all of the scenes that we keep seeing of children sitting in emergency rooms, and there was just another chemical attack. Where you had, 5 days ago, where you had kids, again, internet photos and videos of them gasping for air. You can't screw that one up.
Let me tell you something, though.
You're right. You can't. I mean, Kristen's right.
So this disqualifies him, Kristen? He cannot be president now? Based on that?
It sort of feels like a Howard Dean moment to me, yes.
A Rick Perry moment?
It's the one thing that people are going to know about him. It's the main thing people are going to know about him.
Aleppo. Man, who would have thought that an election would turn on one word, one sound, one phrase like that? I hadn't seen the word Aleppo and didn't know much about it, didn't know anything about it until, you know, the war heated up in Syria And we saw that boy, his last name was Daknish. Remember the 10-year-old? No, he wasn't 10 years old. He was about 5 or 8 years old, thrown in the back of the ambulance, the mop of hair, the dirt and dust all over him. He was stunned and in shock. His family survived that bombing. He was on his way to the hospital. His sibling, I know, had since passed away. It was just a tragic little photo there. And the video where he moved is almost ghost-like. It's just positively stunning. And for a week, he was the poster child of the war in Syria, and he was in Aleppo. And that's when the word resonated with those of us that are, you know, talking about news. You'd think that a presidential candidate would know about that. Just a funny note here. So I was going, Brendan and I are going to go to a restaurant tonight. And I went online to read the menu. And as I was scrolling through the salads and sandwiches, one of them has an ingredient that they label as Aleppo something, Aleppo onion or Aleppo salad or something. I've never seen the word Aleppo before that boy. And then a few days later, there it is again, in a salad recipe or a menu item at a restaurant. Isn't that funny how that happens sometimes? We'll pause here. Griffin has the Song of Summer for us coming up on WGN. Nothing I can see but you when you dance, dance, dance. Feel the good creeping up on you, so just dance, dance, dance. Come on, all those things I shouldn't do, but you dance. In the 2 o'clock hour, we normally do our Vibe Score segment where we feature a song that's just out and everybody gives it a rating. How much did you like that one? We won't be on in the 2 o'clock hour. It'll be pregame coverage with Big Cat Dave Ennett and Ted Albrecht as we get ready for Northwestern football. So, Griff, you're bumping with one of the songs of summer there, right?
Well, that was what won our little competition on Vibe Score was Can't Stop the Feeling by Justin Timberlake. Basically, once a week throughout the summer, with some exceptions here and there, I posted one of the contenders, you'd say, for Song of the Summer, and that whatever that means exactly. But and then we'd have you all vote on it.
Yeah, I would go, I would kind of like it. Bob would always kind of hate it slash not know it slash hate it. Bob was never, I don't think we found a song for poor Bob Kessler this summer.
We're still searching, although I kind of liked that one, I have to say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did kind of like it.
How can you not like Justin Timberlake? So that was the highest score. Griff, did you like that song?
I did, yes. I don't think it's my pick for the Song of the Summer, but it's not a bad choice.
What did you really like this summer?
Well, some things that we put in for contention that did not do so well. So he got an 80, and that was the highest score that any song this summer got. So that,
did you like the new Frank Ocean CD this summer?
Yeah, but there's no Song of Summer contenders there. For one, it came out at the very end of summer. It needs to at least be out early in the summer, but preferably, honestly, come out a couple months before the summer so you get a little time with it, and then it can really be a huge hit through those 3 months. That's how it usually works. Or even some big Song of Summer's contenders this year came out in the last half of last year. You know, that's how it works.
Sure.
Sometimes, yeah.
Well, some songs just have a feel that is more up and fun.
Yeah, but I don't think that's not actually how I usually judge it. This one definitely does. But if it's a big hit in the summer, that's really my criterion. But,
well, this one worked to me. I don't know how big a hit the Justin Timberlake song
was
very, this
year. It was a huge hit. And it is a good choice. I think One Dance by Drake is definitely a contender for sure. I think that might end up being what I think the actual Song of Summer was. Or Panda by Designer, which we played. You may not remember. You hated it, I think. It was the only song we listened to this summer that I think you really, really hated. So
yeah, really. Well, but that's okay.
Yeah, that might be my favorite. But yeah, Justin Timberlake. And then there were two tied for second. This Is What You Came For by Rihanna and Calvin Harris had 78, so just 2 points off that winning spot. And also the Meghan Trainor song.
I like that one.
Me too. You liked that one a lot. I did not care for it.
We're getting ready for Northwestern football. Well, congratulations, Justin Timberlake, if you're listening. You won our Vibe Score Song of Summer segment prize. We'll be sending him $37.53 in the mail, and I know he's really looking forward to that. I just wanted to mention one other thing, Griff, and that is the story that you all talked about with Amy Guth prior to this show, and that was the Wells Fargo story that they fired 5,300 employees because over the last several years, they had a scam where they would give bonuses to employees who got enough new people to sign up for accounts. But they weren't getting enough new accounts, so they just started creating bogus accounts using existing customers' names and account information, opening up new accounts, transferring money in there, saying, hey, I got a new account. And if you get enough of those, you get a bonus. You get a trip to Disney World or a bigger check in the mail, right? But then in the process, A, they were lying, and sometimes you were incurring fees. The fine was $180 million. And that's jaw-dropping until you realize that they have assets of $250 billion and that they've got that kind of money under their sofa cushions. What I'm still waiting for is whether or not there will be any criminal charges. The agency that fined them $100 million doesn't have the ability to prosecute them criminally. This is a civil action. But I'd be interested to see if in the next weeks they say, wait a minute, if you go into people's accounts and take money from them and don't tell them, that's against the law. I don't know who's supposed to go to jail. Maybe nobody, but for crying out loud. We'll continue to follow that story here. I know you're thinking about that as well. We're thinking about Wildcat football. Okay, guys, let's even the record. Dave Ennett's got your play-by-play coming up in a minute or two on WGN. Bob Kessler, thank you for doing the news. Chris DeFlores, as always, our engineer, thank you for that. Producer Griffin Filipich, I am John Williams. Let's get ready for Wildcat football now here on WGN.